Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Trish reading the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Tuesday, April 21st, 2020. WTI's Day of Reckoning. The digital marquee outside Chase Bank in downtown Midland reads, "Negative oil? ? Photo by Tim Fisher. Permian producers agree there's nowhere for their oil to go. By Mellon McEwen, MMCEWEN at MRT.com. Permian Basin oil producers were likely not surprised Monday morning when crude prices began falling on the New York Mercantile Exchange. But as the day progressed, they watched with deepening disbelief as prices not only continued to fall, but for the first time since futures trading began, turned negative, significantly negative, closing at -$37.63. Plains All American issued a posted price bulletin with the price for West Texas Intermediate at -$41.25. David Arrington, who has the oil price posted daily on the digital bulletin board outside his downtown Midland office, said attempts to post a negative price crashed the board. Arrington said that Brent crude, the international standard, continued to trade at world market prices. The negative price is only for the U.S., he said in a phone interview. The reason is refiners. They told us a month ago we're not consuming enough gasoline. A half dozen refiners have shut down. They're not producing any gasoline because there's nowhere for it to go. Other refineries have reduced operations. The negative price means operators are paying to have their oil taken off the production site. You have to think if it makes sense to pay someone to take your oil. I've shut in my oil. I have guys out there this afternoon turning all my wells off. We've been warned this is coming. This is not a surprise. Matt Gallagher, President and Chief Executive Officer of Parsley Energy, agreed. Unfortunately, we predicted this, he told the Reporter-Telegram by email. Today's drop in oil prices underscores the need for proration. We are not in a normal market condition, and it is clear the time for action by everyone, our companies, our state government, and the federal government, is now. Companies have reduced production. The Texas Railroad Commission is considering prorating, and many in the federal government are reviewing their options. But as you can see by today's market, the time to act is now. There was also reaction from elected officials who represent the Permian Basin. There is no way to sugarcoat this news. Oil producers are in for the fight of their lives, U.S. Rep. Mike Conaway said in a statement on social media. To stop prices from hemorrhaging further, it's critical that we act quickly. Following House Republicans' calls to use SPR, the Department of Energy is in negotiations for contracts with 9 U.S. companies to store domestically produced crude oil in the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, the SPR, which will help alleviate the storage shortages. Given today's news, I'm calling on the Department of Commerce to conduct an expedited anti-dumping investigation into Saudi Arabia. Enough is enough, and we must use all the tools available in our arsenal. It won't be easy, but we will get through this downturn just like we have in the past. It's in our West Texas DNA. U.S. Senator Ted Cruz said via Twitter, "Absolutely devastating. As I wrote in the Dallas News, the best way out of this crisis is to safely reopen our economy." U.S. energy producers are on the brink of bankruptcy and millions of jobs, as well as our hard-earned energy independence, hang in the balance. There are steps Congress and the admin can take now to help weather the storm, including funding the SPR and ensuring energy producers have critical access to capital. We will defeat this pandemic, and when we do, we will need our energy producers to help fuel our economic recovery. Nikki Kentelis, Assistant Professor of Practice, Center for Energy Commerce at Texas Tech University, told the Reporter-Telegram in an email that Monday's events were the result of a few factors, beginning with the expiration of the May contract today. Coming into the day, there was open interest of a little over 100,000 contracts, equivalent to over 100 million barrels of production, she wrote. These open positions need to be closed out. There's no shortage available to put incremental production. Not in storage tanks, not in pipelines, not in refineries, not on ships, floating storage. A negative oil price means essentially you have to pay someone to take your crude oil production, as we have previously seen with natural gas prices at WA, HA in West Texas. This is likely to shut in crude oil production. In fact, we have already seen that happening. If it was uneconomic to produce oil at $20 a barrel, it certainly is at negative prices. Kirk Edwards, president of Latigo Petroleum, told the Reporter-Telegram by email, "You are seeing the May contract that has two more days left on it. What is happening is all of the oil speculators got caught trying to hold the May contract too long. If they can't sell it, they have to take physical delivery of the oil, which of course no one can do since there's no storage. This is called a short squeeze, and it is devastating to those speculators. I bet there are some bankruptcies just from today's actions." Brett Wiggs, chief executive officer of Midland-based Oryx Midstream, said by email that Permian production shut-ins are focused on lighter API areas that produce West Texas Intermediate light between 44.1 and 49.9 API gravity to address near-month pricing impacts. While his company does not operate storage at Cushing, Oklahoma, Oryx does have a storage capacity in the Delaware Basin. Wiggs said the company is in a decent position on storage, but this market is changing on a minute-by-minute basis, and May is totally up in the air. In an email, Daniel Juergen, vice chairman of IHS Market, said, "The May crude oil contract is going out not with a whimper, but a primal scream. But what matters now for the oil price is the June contract and the market's expectation for the depth of the demand crash and how much it is offset by cuts by producers, the iron hand of economics, and by slow opening up in parts of the world. The June contract closed at $20.43, down $4.60 a barrel. Cantelis said the June contract will respond to the market's expectations of supply and demand for June. She said the deal to cut global oil production by nearly 10 million barrels, almost double that amount if other nations like Norway and Brazil participate. This agreement is set to begin in May, and if the market senses that the parties will in fact abide by the agreement, that will signal a slowdown in the oil glut and may help stop the price fall. On the demand side, the COVID-19 pandemic has resulted in an estimated 20 million to 35 million barrels a day of demand destruction. The longer economies are shut down, the more demand for energy will decrease, the lower the price. The only thing we can say for certain is prices are uncertain," she said. Arrington said that 4 weeks from now, as the June contract nears expiration, oil prices could crash yet again if supplies continue to swamp demand. "We are not out of the woods yet," he said. But he did sounded an optimistic note. "Remember, the cure for low oil prices is low oil prices," he said. "The world cannot live on negative oil prices or on $20 oil prices. This is temporary. We all have to remember steady wins the day. We don't need to get hyped up and worried, though this is the first time this has happened in my lifetime. Stay calm and take a deep breath." Sidebar to the article. Why the big difference in prices? What caused oil prices to plunge from $55.90 or 300% to a negative $37.63 a barrel Monday, while prices are expected to be $20 a barrel as new futures contract takes effect? Analytics firm Wood Mackenzie offers a primer. There are three factors at play. First, oil demand is contracting, so there isn't the desire in the market for the volume of oil available. Secondly, because there is surplus oil, producers would prefer to store their oil rather than shut in production, so there is greater demand for physical storage. Finally, and most crucially for the price differential seen Monday, the contract for front month crude oil futures expires today. So, when a futures contract expires and trading moves to the cash market, there is often an accelerated shift in prices. For some time, it's been clear the cash market is very congested thanks to the pressure on storage. Discounts for cash crude have been even wider than for futures contracts. So, as the front month contract expires and goes to cash, the discount becomes extreme. For WTI, the problem is compounded because the contract is settled by physical delivery at Cushing, where storage space is very tight. Storage tanks there are expected to be full in weeks, some experts estimate within 2 weeks. So part of the steep decline in West Texas Intermediate reflects technicalities around the contract for oil to be delivered in May, which expires while short-term storage issues are severe. There's also an element of market sentiment at play. While the coronavirus lockdowns remain in place, demand for crude will remain depressed, and the U.S. is coming into the season when demand traditionally peaks, the summer driving season. However, the economic effects of the lockdown, rising unemployment, means less cash in the economy and fewer people traveling because of lockdowns, and those are affecting traders' views of where demand will sit in the coming months. If there's no demand, the commodity is not so valuable. So the
message
to
the community, there are messages from community leaders. Every single one of us here in Midland and the Permian have watched our fight for our city and economy get even worse as the business day on Monday closed. As if a Middle East oil fight were not enough, coupled with the coronavirus, now we are watching the price of and market of oil plummet into record low territory. It's hard to find anything good to say or think in these difficult days, but allow me to take a chance at something encouraging as we reach deep within ourselves for the fight of our physical and economic lives. Back in 1999, First Baptist Church decided the time was right to start a new church in Northwest Midland, where about the only thing that existed was a small little neighborhood called Grassland, Lowe's, and a junior high called Abel. At the time my family and I arrived in Midland, oil was at about $10 a barrel. Though we really didn't know what the $10 oil meant, we did learn about the people and the culture of Midland in the face of $10 oil, and that spirit of the people and culture of Midland has not changed. We learned that the people of Midland were ready to fight the right fight at any time. They were ready to fight for family and the well-being of one another. They were ready to never give up and keep fighting for the American dream, even if the circumstances were not encouraging. They were a people who wanted what was best for their neighbor, regardless of race, creed, religion, or whether you were a white collar or blue collar. In short, they were a people who knew that life was about loving God and loving your neighbor, and when the heat was turned up, they got fired up and fought for one another and the future of this great place we call home. For a season, we might continue to take some punches, but soon we will get back to go back to work. Soon we will fight back a virus like we have every other threat to our health. Soon we will see growth again and have learned another set of lessons about our industry and be better for it. But just like that generation more than 21 years ago, we have to make the choice to be who we are for one another and fight the right fight for one another and those who will come after us. My dear friends, do not lose heart and faith, and let's choose once again to show this state and this country what makes this place we call home so great. Simply put, we are great because of who we are above the ground. Mayor Patrick Payton. Industry. This is from Secretary Don Evans, Chairman of PSP. Industry. The challenges ahead haven't yet been defined and cannot be underestimated. Companies from all industries are adjusting to market conditions, making difficult decisions, and finding ways to weather this storm. Yet as we look ahead, a growing world will continue to need reliable and affordable energy, and the Permian will continue to offer the world that energy. The determination, resilience, and grit of those who call the Permian Basin home give us all hope and give me confidence that our long-term future is bright. PSP's commitment to partnership continues today and will continue tomorrow during the years ahead. We know we have the best place, partners, and people to respond to today's challenges, and over time put them behind us as we all work together toward a better tomorrow. Secretary Don Evans, Chairman of PSP. Business. This is from Bobby Burns. The historic drop in the price of oil impacts our Midland business community unlike any other in the nation. Once again, we are faced with a significant and disturbing downturn in our oil-centric economy. It's nothing new, and it's nothing we can't handle. We need to be reassured that we, as an oil-based economy, get paid to provide goods and services in the form of energy. And the world will need it again, probably sooner rather than later. As Midlanders, we must challenge ourselves in order to solve our economic plight. Midland businesses will be forced to adapt. But make no mistake, we'll be defined by how we respond to this double adversity of the COVID-19 pandemic and the slashing of oil prices. Who we are and who we will become is more important than who we were. Normally, I might say that we need to focus on one impossible thing at a time, but Midlanders can handle both COVID-19 and single-digit oil. We should remind ourselves that standing here and crossing our fingers helps no one. We should work together to fight for the oil industry in every ethical manner. Midland fuels the world, and the world will still need the energy. Midland will come out of this better than ever. We needed a timeout, and we got it. Let's use it. Bobby Burns, CEO, Midland Chamber of Commerce. And the next one is from Mark Palmer, Abel Hanger Foundation Director. Philanthropy. The stories coming to us from nonprofits here in Midland are inspirational. Our nonprofit community is collaborative, but now we are hearing stories of how they are working together to find new ways to meet the needs of the people they serve. Stories like PBS providing State of Texas curriculum on air to help parents with homeschooling, and the Boys and Girls Club of Midland working with the West Texas Food Bank to provide food to families in need. These are two of the amazing stories I've heard of organizations adapting to be able to continue their work while still diligently safeguarding the health of their colleagues. A nonprofit exists to serve a charitable need. In the current climate, with their hands tied by COVID, they're still finding ways to fulfill their mission or even reshape it a bit to help us. Our nonprofits are doing what they always do, providing a safety net for Midlanders who have found themselves challenged by this unprecedented set of circumstances. Mark Palmer, Abel Hanger Foundation Executive Director. City. Confirmed cases connected to Medical Lodge increased to 28 by Stuart Doreen, sdoreen at hearstnp.com. The number of confirmed coronavirus cases inside Midland County jumped to 64 on Monday, a one-day increase of 21, according to the City of Midland. At the same time, the number of cases at the Midland Medical Lodge skilled nursing facility increased to 28. Of the Medical Lodge cases, 8 are staff members and the rest are residents. 2 of the new cases are children. 1 is an adolescent, according to the city. The new cases are number 44, a female in her 50s who is self-isolating at home. Numbers 45 and 46 are 2 Medical Lodge residents. 1 is self-isolating at the medical facility and the other is an inpatient at Midland Memorial. Number 47 is a male in his 50s who is isolating at home. The 2 women at the lodge were tested by Medical Center Hospital, according to the city, and their sources of exposure were contact to a known case. The other 2 were tested by private providers, and the sources of exposure for both were community acquired. Number 48, a male child under 9 years of age who was tested by a private provider. The boy is currently self-isolating at home. The source of exposure is contact to a known case. Number 49, a male in his 20s who was tested by Midland Health at Midland Medical Lodge. He is a staff member, and his last day of work was Saturday. He is self-isolating at home, and the source of exposure is contact to known case. Number 50 is a female child 0 to 9 who was tested by Midland Health. The girl is self-isolating at home, and the source of exposure is contact to known case. Number 51 is an adolescent female aged 10 to 19 who was tested by Midland Health. She is currently self-isolating at home. The source of exposure is contact to a known case. The following confirmed cases, numbers 52 to 64 are all residents at Midland Medical Lodge. They were all tested by Midland Health at the facility and are self-isolating in the isolation wing at Midland Medical Lodge. In all of the cases, the source of exposure is contact to known cases. This is a list of the rest of the cases, number 52 through number 64. Of the testing facilitated by Midland Health at Midland Medical Lodge on Friday, 19 tests were negative. Midland Memorial, elective surgeries might not resume this week, by Caitlin Randall. See Randall at MRT.com. Although Texas Governor Greg Abbott issued an executive order allowing hospitals to resume elective surgeries on Wednesday, Midland Memorial Hospital may not be able to restart those procedures this week, CEO Russell Myers said Monday. He said a condition of the executive order is that elective procedures must not deplete a hospital's supply of personal protective equipment or bed capacity for COVID-19 patients. As the number of COVID-19 cases continues to rise in Midland, particularly with the outbreak at Midland Medical Lodge, Myers said hospital officials aren't sure they could meet that requirement. We were prepared to move forward with loosening our restrictions on elective procedures as soon as this week, he said during a press briefing. Unfortunately, last week's significant increase in cases, particularly the outbreak at Midland Medical Lodge, has caused us to slow that process just a bit. The hospital is awaiting test results for all residents and staff members at the nursing home, Myers said. He said they will use those results to determine when to reactivate elective procedures. We hope that that can still take place in the next few days. We have a lot of reasons, lots of motivation to return to doing elective work, but we intend to be very thoughtful and careful about that, and we will not allow it to jeopardize our ability to respond to the pandemic. Myers previously said the hospital experienced a 15% decline in revenue for the month of March after canceling elective surgeries, amounting to about $1 million in losses. He had said the hospital intended to reintroduce elective surgeries gradually after restrictions were lifted, going department by department. 28 people from Midland Medical Lodge have tested positive for the coronavirus, 20 residents and 8 employees. One resident, a woman in her 90s, did die last week from complications related to the virus. One resident was admitted to the hospital over the weekend, and another resident was receiving treatment in the emergency department on Monday. He said last Friday that 14 additional residents were being isolated at Midland Medical Lodge in a ward the facility implemented for any residents experiencing symptoms. City, Southwest to remove Midland to Vegas flight. By Stuart Doreen, sdoreen at hearstnp.com. Southwest Airlines has told the City of Midland that the daily direct flight from Midland to Las Vegas will be removed during the month of May. Airports Director Justine Ruff told the Reporter-Telegram of the cut, which is expected to be part of a larger group of cuts the airline is expecting to make over the next few months. The Dallas Morning News reported last week that Southwest Airlines was dropping 500 flights a day through May 2nd, and an additional 250 flights a day from between May 3rd and May 16th, according to a memo sent to crew members. The carrier will also cut 100 flights a day on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Saturdays, between May 17th and June 6th. The flight cuts are on top of previously announced reductions that brought the number of flights a day down to 2,000. Ruff said she has not heard anything from American Eagle or United. The airport's director said she is hearing that air traffic is down 96% from a year ago. She told the Reporter-Telegram in March that load factors appeared to move from 70% to 20 to 30% since airport service in Midland was hit by the coronavirus pandemic and the steep drop in the price of oil. She added that parking lot is holding at 400 to 450 vehicles. That number is down from the 942 at the end of March and about a quarter of the total before the oil price and pandemic period. Obits and death notices for April 21st. Martha Ellen Kennedy Locke. On April 19th, Martha Ellen Kennedy Locke, 86, passed away at her home. She survived by her husband Tuffy Locke, son Clay Kennedy, and wife Diane of Midland, daughter Donna Dominguez and husband Crespin of Odessa, daughter Gina Olivares and husband Ben of Houston. The family extends its special thanks to home health care providers, especially Adita Pat and Irene, and to Home Hospice of Odessa. Visitation will be from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Tuesday, April 21st, at 2020 at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Graveside services will be at 4 p.m. Wednesday, April 22nd, 2020, at Sunset Memorial Gardens with Reverend Dr. Jimmy Braswell officiating. In lieu of flowers, donations can be made to Gardendale Church of Christ. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. To send family condolences, sign the guest book at sunsetodessa.com. Rita N. Wheeler. Rita N. Wheeler, 94, of Midland, passed away on Saturday, April 18th. Services are pending with Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Tuesday, April 21st, 2020, front page. Saudi Pearl Harbor event underway. I am sure you are acutely aware of what has been transpiring in the Texas energy industry and the utter devastation it is wreaking, not only Texas, but in every energy-producing state. I testified last week at the Railroad Commission hearing on pro-ration. As per usual, battle lines were drawn pitting the major oil companies, refinery operators, and most large independents against the smaller 2,900 or so Texas independents producers. I am for some kind of smart proration, as I think all Texas producers should cut back proportionally, but if, and only if, the cutback volumes are not made right back up with Saudi and other foreign barrels being imported in. And speaking of that, the Wall Street Journal reported April 18th of the impending Saudi Pearl Harbor event taking place as they continue to flood an additional 40 million barrels into our Gulf Coast, starting now through April and May. Saudi averaged less than 500,000 barrels per day in all of 2019. This is just spiking the football at the American producer, and no one in our administration seems to care one bit that it has driven the oil price here in Texas to literally $0 Monday. How is our industry supposed to survive? For us to just sit back and do nothing would be an incredible loss of what I think is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for this nation to get in position to be energy independent, a dream we have all sought. Seeing as how the energy industry is one of Texas' biggest tax generators and job creators, it would be great if Texas could take the lead with some plan to address the present situation. I personally think this is a unique opportunity to have Texas and this nation look at this strategically so we can, once and for all, get away from our every 3 to 4 year price shock Saudi sends us by flooding our markets with oil. My idea would be to have a North American pact, call it NAPTA for fun, North American Production Trade Agreement, whereby Canada, Mexico, and the U.S. work together to balance what the refining complex in the U.S. needs now, which is about 70% of what we needed just 3 months ago. We import 4.2 million barrels of oil per day from Canada, out of the 6 million per day total into this country. Mexico is another 500,000 BOPD. We could place a $40 floor on this pact, which would allow each of the three countries to survive during the next year with their domestic industries, and we would have the administration place a $30 to $40 tariff for any excess imported oil coming into these North American countries. That was over and above the percentages that were coming in using the fourth quarter of 2019 as a standard before Saudi started flooding. This would, once and for all, take away the Saudi manipulation of our industry. Thomas Friedman, a New York Times opinion columnist, just penned an article titled "Post-Pandemic, Here's How America Rises Again," where he looked to Congress to invest with an eye on the future. Part of his piece dealt with the topic of more cheap, domestically produced, low and zero carbon energy, so we become less vulnerable to the oil price manipulations of Saudi Arabia and Russia, and less likely to court Mother Nature's next curveball, climate change. Friedman's examples for energy. A lot has been going on behind the scenes on the global energy front that actually holds the promise of not only making America more energy independent, but doing it based more on clean energy than fossil fuels, if we play our cards right. But Donald Trump has not been playing our cards right. Trump has been dancing with Russia and Saudi Arabia, the opposite of investing in a clean energy economy. For decades now, Saudi Arabia has been the world's swing producer, adjusting its oil production to steer the price to the level of its liking, usually higher. The Saudis grew comfortable doing this because they viewed their 260 billion barrels of oil in the ground as savings in the bank, so they did not care if they pumped a little more or less in any year, as long as they satisfied the needs of their growing economy. Not any longer. Thanks to much more fuel-efficient cars, many more electric vehicles, the backlash against petroleum-based plastics, the widening global consensus on climate change and massive new U.S. oil production, Saudi Arabia is beginning to realize that its oil in the ground is not money in the bank. It's a diminishing asset, possibly a stranded asset, that someday it may not be able to sell at any price. As a result, the Saudis have become much more aggressive in securing market share everywhere possible instead of worrying about the price. That helped set off the recent Saudi-Russian price war. And while the two countries have apparently reached a truce to put a floor under collapsing oil prices, I wouldn't bet on it holding. How would a wise president play this? Not how Trump did, which was to beg the Saudis and Russians to cut production and raise oil prices so everyone in the world could pay these two petro-dictatorships more money for less oil. How foolish was that? A farsighted leader, argued Andy Karsner, a former U.S. Assistant Energy Secretary, could have imposed a variable U.S. tariff or fee on imported oil, which would be easily absorbed while prices are now slumping. Such an import fee could dynamically and automatically kick in incrementally if prices fell below an agreed floor, say $40 to $50 a barrel, the price that U.S. producers need to stay in business and supply America. The fee would disappear if prices jump above the agreed level. If we guaranteed U.S. oil producers a predictable price floor to enable the least indebted and most productive of them to survive, Karsner told me, it would pay multiple benefits. It would raise money for us to invest in infrastructure, prevent job losses for skilled engineers and multi-billion-dollar bailouts for U.S. oil companies, keep manageably low gasoline prices for U.S. consumers, and strengthen our energy security from predatory efforts by Russia and Saudi Arabia to wipe out our domestic oil industry. But most important, it would accelerate our clean energy transition by shielding our electric car industry from foreign manipulated gasoline prices and our wind and solar industries from temporarily suppressed natural gas prices. We've got some momentum. Let's pile on. As the Times just reported, renewable energy sources are set to account for nearly 21% of the electricity the United States uses for the first time this year, up from about 18% last year and 10% in 2010. Many of our oil companies actually have been surviving on cheap credit, not smart fracking. The average return an oil company can make from fracking these days is actually the same as solar and wind in many cases, with a lot less risk. Already, 3/4 of the coal-fired plants in America now cost more just to operate than do brand new solar and wind farms, said Hal Harvey, chief executive of Energy Innovation. The best part of using a variable oil import fee to stimulate investment in a U.S. clean energy economy is that it doesn't require an outlay from the Treasury. It actually raises money for the Treasury while, as Karsner put it, creating the incentives for America's oil companies to do what they must to thrive, and that is evolve into diversified clean energy companies. With some policy creativity, one day we could become immune not only to COVID-19, but also to petrodictators. Now that's healthy. In closing, until someone sees a way through the quagmire of our now $0 oil prices in the Permian Basin fields today, please talk to your elected officials that it is wrong that we continue to let Saudi have a blockade of our American oil coming to the Texas Gulf Coast refining complex. And to those refiners that are buying the Saudi oil, now especially the extra 40 million barrels over the next month, I hope you have your public relations people ready to let the light off Halliburton and Schlumberger, and now just about every energy service company and oil company workers, know why you chose cheap Saudi crude over their domestic energy jobs. All of you should be ashamed for doing so. Kirk Edwards. Kirk Edwards is an independent oil man in Odessa. COVID-19 news by the numbers. Ector County confirmed cases, 60. Ector County negative, 612 out of 895 tested, with 223 pending. 4 deaths. Midland County, 47 confirmed out of 1,209 tested. 4 deaths. Texas, 19,458 confirmed, with 190,394 tested. Total Texas deaths, 495. U.S. cases, 746,625 total confirmed, and 39,083 deaths. Find out more at co.ector.tx.us. or dshs.state.tx.us, or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/tztrjlf. Nurse Tests Positive by Michael Merlo, MERLO at OAOA.com. During Monday's virtual hospital press conference, Medical Center Hospital President and CEO Russell Tippins said an MCH nurse who hasn't been in the hospital since April 11th has tested positive for the coronavirus and that the nurse was exposed by community spread. We have gone back and done some research on any patient exposure and anybody that nurse came in contact with. We are going to notify them that if they're having symptoms, to follow up with their primary care physician, he said. Tippin said that MCH has 37 positives, 329 negatives, and 177 pending, including Madison Medical Resort employees. MCH has conducted a total of 543 tests. Tippin said that there are 3 confirmed positives in the hospital and 17 pending persons under investigation. MCH Chief Nursing Officer Kristen Timmons said that they've tested 169 Madison Medical Resort employees and have received 27 negatives back. A resident at the nursing facility tested positive last week. We are keeping up with the nursing home leadership daily in regards to anybody else they have contacted to come into the clinic to be tested, she said. Odessa Regional Medical Center President Stacy Brown said that, including the Madison Medical Resort numbers, they have tested 242 people and have 12 positives, 166 negatives, and 64 pending. She added that ORMC tested 98 Madison Medical Resort residents and received 38 negative results back while still waiting for the other 60. ORMC has 1 person under investigation in the hospital, she said. While MCH is still awaiting the arrival of rapid test kits, ORMC Chief Medical Officer Dr. Rohit Sarvanen said that they received 1 test kit from the state after projecting they would receive 2. 1 test kit contains 24 tests, Sarvanen said, but two of those are for quality control, so that leaves ORMC with 22 rapid tests. That does not add a whole lot, he said. It might be just enough for the patients that we are admitting to the hospital. Even then, we don't know when we'll get new ones in. Saarinen said that from previous weeks, Ector County's numbers of positive cases have been doubling. We're in the part of the curve where our curve is still on the rise, he said. We have to be very mindful of when we talk about reopening. The president has talked about it. Our governor has talked about it. But regional specific strategy is very important. During a Monday Facebook Live, Odessa Mayor David Turner said he wants to open up businesses sooner than the governor wants. He did say rules would need to be in place to make sure we are not spreading coronavirus. County Commissioner Eddie Shelton said that he will be the new Emergency Operations Center and Ector County Health Department Public Information Officer following a rocky last week with health department officials and another county commissioner during the daily briefings conducted by Zoom with hospital officials and the media. Shelton said that Ector County has 60 positive cases, 612 negatives, 223 pending, and that there have been 895 tests in Ector County. He added that there have been 28 recovered and 4 deaths. There have been 5 deaths in Ector County hospitals, but one of the deaths was not a resident of Ector County, and the health department only records Ector County residents. Other COVID news. Lincoln Tower Retirement Home in Odessa sent out letters to their residents saying that they currently have a resident or associate that is being tested for COVID-19. When hospital and county officials were asked if they knew about a patient from Lincoln Tower, they said they did not, but would look into it. A Lincoln Tower representative said that they do have a plan in place, but that information should come from the general manager in the corporate office. Neither returned phone calls. Regarding the 3 children in Ector County who tested positive for COVID-19 last week after their grandmother's exposure, Shelton said that the mother of those children had also tested positive and the 13-year-old daughter was referred to a hospital. Shelton said that there have been 2 COVID-19 clusters at doctor's offices in Ector County, but said that he was told by the health department not to release the names of those offices. When asked why health department and EOC officials were not attending the Zoom call, he said it's a team effort. Shelton said that the media would need to go through the city to release the virtual COVID-19 cluster map of the county because the EOC used the city's geographic information system for mapping. After the hospital briefing, the city public information officer, Devin Sanchez, initially said she would send the map, but later said she was instructed to send the map to Shelton so he could send it to numerous media outlets, many of whom had been requesting the map for more than a week. The map was eventually sent to the OA, but doesn't have a legend or street names. Other areas of the state and country have provided street-level maps of coronavirus cases. Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Tuesday, April 21st, 2020. Obituaries. Gwen Alice Larimore Hodnett, Odessa. Gwen Alice Larimore Hodnett, 64, passed away Monday, April 13th, 2020, in Weatherford, Texas. Gwen was born July 27th, 1955, in Brady, Texas, to Laverne Jackson Larimore and Charlene Blanks. Gwen married Don Hodnett on December 20th, 1974, in Odessa, Texas. Gwen is preceded in death by her parents. She is survived today by her husband, children, Heather McReynolds, Donna Hess, and Jared Hodnett, grandchildren, Hannah and Miranda McReynolds, Jubal and Charlotte Hess, and Jaden, Tristan, Cameron, and Alexa Woods, siblings Tony Larimore and Charlotte Barnett. A memorial service will be held to celebrate Gwen's life at a later date this year. Martha Ellen Kennedy Locke, Odessa. On April 19, 2020, Martha Ellen Kennedy Locke, 86, passed away peacefully at her home surrounded by loved ones. She was a loving wife, mother, grandmother, great-grandmother, aunt, and sister. She was an exceptional wife and mother. Martha was a very selfless person, and she cared deeply for her family and friends. She was born in Coleman County to Clyde and Maggie Vercher on August 16, 1933. Martha graduated from Moselle High School in Coleman County and attended high school reunions even in her golden years. Martha moved to Odessa, where she met Tommy Lee Kennedy at the gas station where he worked. Tommy said it was love at first sight, and they were happily married and cherished each other for 52 years. After the death of her husband, Tommy, to the surprise of everyone, she married a longtime friend of hers and Tommy's, Arvel Tuffy Locke. He loved Martha and took care of her during her long illness. He has been a blessing. Martha was preceded in death by her husband, Tommy, brother Paul, and parents. Martha is survived by her husband, Tuffy Locke, son Clay Kennedy, and wife Diane of Midland, Texas, daughter Donna Dominguez and husband Crespin of Odessa, Texas, daughter Gina Olivares and husband Ben of Houston, Texas, grandchildren Ryan Kennedy and wife Rochelle, Kay Kennedy, Amber Dominguez, Blake Dominguez, Lauren Robinson and husband Reed, and Carly Olivares, great-grandson Griffin Kennedy, nieces and nephews Sherry Tuttle and husband Robert, Janet Hardwick and husband Preston, Brenda Bartholomew and husband Bill, Paul Edward Vercher and James Vercher and wife Jenny. The family would like to extend a special thank you to the home health providers, especially Anita, Pat, and Irene, and to Home Hospice of Odessa for their wonderful care of Martha. Visitation will be from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Tuesday, April 21st, 2020, at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Graveside services will be at 4 p.m. Wednesday, April 22nd, 2020, at Sunset Memorial Gardens, with Reverend Dr. Jimmy Braswell officiating. In lieu of flowers, donations can be made to Gardendale Church of Christ. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. To send family condolences, please sign her guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. Eddie Hernandez Palma, Odessa. Eddie Hernandez Palma, age 52, of Odessa, Texas, passed from this life on Friday, April 17, 2020. He was born on Monday, October 23, 1967, in Odessa, Texas, to Raul Calderon Palma and Cruz Hernandez Palma. Eddie was a loving, family-oriented man that loved family gatherings. He always called to check on his children and grandchildren to make sure they were okay, as well as he cherished his girlfriend, Vanessa Munoz, and her children, Elise, JoJo, and Genesis, very much. Those left to cherish his love and memories are his father, Raul Calderon Palma of Odessa, sons Eddie Palma Jr. of Odessa, and Joseph Palma of Roswell, New Mexico, daughters Valerie Palma and spouse Monica, Justine Nicholson and husband Adam, Angelica Franco and Alyssa Franco, all of Odessa, girlfriend Vanessa Munoz and her children, Elise, JoJo, and Genesis, brothers Saul Palma and wife Aida of Odessa, Jaime Palma and fiancée Lorena of Redwood City, California, Raul Palma of Odessa and Carlos Palma and wife Ida of Albuquerque, New Mexico, and sisters Vilma Cueto and Shelley Cueto, both of Hobbs, New Mexico, as well as 9 grandchildren and numerous nieces, nephews, cousins, and friends. He was preceded in death by his parents and sister, Margie Garcia. Rosary will be held at 7 p.m. Tuesday, April 21st, 2020, at Acres West 24-Hour Funeral Chapel. Mass of Christian Burial will be held at 1 p.m. Wednesday, April 22nd, 2020, at Holy Redeemer Catholic Church. Burial will follow at the Odessa Gardens 2 section of Ector County Cemetery. Arrangements are entrusted to Acres West Funeral Chapel, and condolences to the family may be sent online at acreswestfuneral.com. Death Notices. Stephen C. Cosby, Odessa. Stephen C. Cosby, 59, of Odessa, died Friday, April 17th, 2020, in Odessa. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Rosa Melita Arroyo Morales, Odessa. Rosa Melita Arroyo Morales, 55, of Odessa, Texas, died Friday, April 17th, 2020, in Odessa, Texas. Mass will be celebrated at 10 a.m. Tuesday, April 21st, 2020, at St. Anthony's Catholic Church. The family has opted for a cremation to follow at Martinez Crematory. Father Tony Franco is officiating. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. William Melvin Bill Joyner Jr., Odessa. William Melvin Bill Joyner Jr., 81, of Odessa, died Sunday, April 19th, 2020, in Odessa. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa.
Hello, this is Michael, continuing to read articles from the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Tuesday, April 21st. Trump eyes Saudi oil import ban. SPR fill as prices go negative. By Dan Murtaugh and Chelsea Mez, Bloomberg. U.S. President Donald Trump said he'll look into a proposal to prevent Saudi Arabian oil from unloading in the U.S., and that he wants to fill the Strategic Petroleum Reserve after crude prices fell into negative territory. This is a great time to buy oil, Trump said in a White House press conference Monday night. He said he wants either permission from Congress to purchase oil for the reserve or will allow companies to use its 75 million barrels of spare capacity to store crude. Trump also said he would look into a proposal by Republican Senator Kevin Cramer to stop Saudi crude shipments currently on their way to the U.S. We certainly have plenty of oil, so I'll take a look at that, he said. West Texas Intermediate oil, the U.S. benchmark, plunged to minus $37.63 a barrel Monday, the most extreme price reaction to the severe drop in global demand amid an unrelenting supply glut. Trump called the unprecedented slump below zero largely a financial squeeze, though the situation is also rooted in physical practicality. The world is running out of places to store crude oil. The crash accelerated as May futures are set to expire Tuesday, forcing traders to unload contracts to avoid taking physical delivery because storage space is almost maxed out. The June contract, by comparison, settled at $20.43 a barrel. It's more of a financial thing than an oil situation, he said, adding that it will be very short term. Here's a commentary piece. Texas, like OPEC, can't turn back time for oil. By Liam Denning, Bloomberg. The Texas Railroad Commission has been petitioned to go back in time. The commission just held a marathon hearing on whether it ought to do something it hasn't done in almost 50 years. organize curbs on the state's oil output. I say organize because cuts are happening anyway. There's simply no choice when the COVID-19 crisis has wiped out maybe a third of global oil demand. Several companies, including large producers such as Pioneer Natural Resources Company, have called on the commission to proration production to support oil prices. A recurring theme was waste. The person who raised it most often, outgoing Commissioner Ryan Sitton, even parodied himself repeating the word in a video clip doing the rounds on social media. Clearly, this isn't your grandfather's oil market, a point reinforced by James Mann, attorney for the Texas Pipeline Association and formerly a commission employee in the 1970s. He observed that the folks familiar with the data-intensive work of apportioning quotas for thousands upon thousands of wells across the state were no longer contractually employed, so to speak. They're all dead now. Everybody that knew how to do the arithmetic is gone. When I spoke with Mann the day after the hearing, he recounted other ways in which the world has changed. Waste, for example, meant actual waste when it was first used to justify pro-rationing. In the early 1930s, a swarm of wildcatters drawn by the gushing East Texas field sought to outpump their neighbors, regardless of what the market could absorb. Plus, ka-change, as they say in Midland. Back then, though, oil was coming out of the ground with no place for it to go. They were putting it in dirt pits and leaky wooden tanks, as Mann says. A lot of oil soaked into the ground or evaporated. Waste in its very worst sense. That can't happen today, provided regulators do their job. If oil is running out of places to go, then futures prices will tell you ahead of time, and wells will get shut in, with the weakest usually going first. Rather than a physical issue, waste today is a euphemism for lost money. As James Teague, co-CEO of Enterprise Products Partners LP, put it bluntly, I think I'd define waste as inefficient producers continuing to produce at a time like this. Speaking of which, much concern was expressed about the fate of smaller producers in particular. There are over 2,900 producers that account for less than 10% of Texas's output, according to Matt Gallagher, CEO of Parsley Energy Incorporated. This implies that, at best, they produce almost 1 million barrels of oil equivalent per day in aggregate, but just a few hundred each on average. The vast majority of wells in Texas are dribblers rather than gushers. Bernstein Research estimates that when oil is at $25, a typical marginal well needs to produce 12 barrels a day just to break even, before counting any natural gas. Two-thirds of Texas's wells produce less than 10 barrels a day equivalent, including gas and benchmark West Texas Intermediate crude, crashed below $13 on Monday morning. And low prices are only one problem. Several small producers complained about getting shut out of pipelines, tanks, and refineries altogether as those businesses prioritize bigger companies. The inescapable truth is that scale economies are vital in this business. Even before COVID-19 hit, the economic case for sinking money, water, labor, and power into lifting maybe just one truckload of oil every other day from a backyard was hardly compelling. Yet the idea of bowing to that reality is anathema. Advocates argue shutting down these wells, even temporarily, could leave them unable to start up again, wasting the remaining oil and gas. But this presupposes the remainder has positive economic value, an increasingly dubious proposition in an oil market barreling toward peak demand. Factoring in the cost of decommissioning these wells only reinforces this math, but ironically, avoiding that cost also reinforces the desire to cling on. Pro-rationing would reinforce this further, especially if smaller producers were made exempt. It would mean more efficient wells subsidizing higher cost ones. Any number of factors may explain why there is such concern to preserve this part of the industry. immediate impacts such as unpaid bills and layoffs often loom larger than considerations of long-term viability. Moreover, sheer numbers matter more than scale when it comes to one thing. Barrels don't vote. People do. Zooming out, the state's prorationing debate is fractal, with the pattern repeating. Most obviously, OPEC Plus tries to do the same thing at the global level, just as Texas used to. By holding cheaper oils off the market, countries such as Saudi Arabia leave room for higher cost ones, raising the price overall. OPEC Plus does this for similar reasons. Like the small producers in Texas, countries such as Saudi Arabia and Russia have economic models that simply wouldn't work too well if oil was priced like a regular commodity. Oil's centrality development over the past century made it indispensable and demand both ubiquitous and inelastic. Combine that with the geographic concentration of resources, and the result is an edifice of political and economic structures built on the back of this miracle substance. The oil market is just different. But it is being less different. That's the underlying reason for the Commission's virtual gathering this week. COVID-19 is like a fever dream of all the pressures that were bearing down on oil already. The last time Texas was prorationing, in the early 1970s, the conventional wisdom on resources and their fast approaching exhaustion was captured in reports like The Limits to Growth. Such ideas supported both OPEC's power and the notion it was better to ration oil supply and conserve resources, even under those Texas backyards. In the exception, prices would only rise in the future. Today, we know we won't run out of oil. Mann makes the excellent point that the sheer capability of oil production holds prices down today rather than physical barrels being poured into bathtubs for want of a buyer. Capital markets have run out of patience with the industry's current business model of high and often inefficient growth. There's simply no economic justification for having thousands of operators with all their associated overhead. Meanwhile, the planet is running out of capacity to absorb oil's emissions. Demand for oil remains high, but is no longer as inelastic as it was. That trend will intensify. It is striking that this enormous vital market is now dominated by a shale industry that couldn't pay a decent return even before COVID-19 showed up, and two sclerotic petrostates, Saudi Arabia and Russia, living off their foreign exchange reserves. These are the edifices built for a different time of dependable demand and managed supply. We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.